suffered.
Tapam.
Misery. Nirvritti. Happiness.
Not.
Amum. Him. Avishat. Entered. Vimantam. One who is shameful. Vachyatam. Ill fame.
Praptam.
Obtaining.
Sukayanti.
Give pleasure.
Api.
Although.
No.
Not.
Gunaha.
Good qualifications like possessing opulence. So translation. Following the advice of the demigods, Indra killed Vritrasura and he suffered because of this sinful killing. Although the other demigods were happy, he could not derive happiness from the killing of Vritrasura. Indra's other good qualities, such as tolerance and opulence, could not help him in his grief. So you repeat, following the advice of the demigods. Indra killed Vritrasura. And he suffered because of this sinful killing. Although the other demigods were happy, he could not derive happiness from the killing of Vritrasura. Indra's other good qualities, such as tolerance and opulence, could not help him in his grief. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One cannot be happy by committing sinful acts even if one is endowed with material opulence. Indra found this to be true. People began to blaspheme him, saying, "This person has killed a brahmana for the sake of enjoying heavenly material happiness." Therefore, in spite of being king of heaven and enjoying material opulence, Indra was always unhappy because of the accusations of the populace. So, what I'm going to do is just do a short purport, and the rest of the chapter has maybe one line purport or no purport, so I'm just going to finish up the chapter and then speak. So, next text.
Havantim chandalim eva rupinim jadaya vipamanangnigim yakshma grastam astritpatam vikirya palitan kesham tishta tishteti basinim mina ganja sugandena kurvatim marga dushanam.
Indra saw a personified sinful reaction chasing him, appearing like a chandala woman, a woman of the lowest class. She seemed very old and all the limbs of her body trembled. Because she was afflicted with tuberculosis, her body and garments were covered with blood, breathing an unbearable fishy odor that polluted the entire street. It's interesting. Prabhupada used the word street. It's path, actually, is the marga, means path, street. Yeah. She called to Indra, wait! And Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, when a person is afflicted with tuberculosis, he often vomits blood, which makes his garments bloody. Text 14. Nabo gato disha sarva sahasraksho vishampate apragudi chim disham turnam pravishto nripa manasam. O king, Indra first fled to the sky, but there also he saw the woman of personified sin chasing him. This witch followed him wherever he went. At last he very quickly went to the northeast and entered the Manasa Sarovara Lake. Text 15. Saavasat pushkara nalatantum alabdhabogo
Yadi Hagni Dutaha Prashani Sahasram Alapshitonta Sanchintihan Brahma Vadad Vimoksham.
Always thinking of how we could be relieved from the sinful reaction of killing a brahmana. King Indra, invisible to everyone, lived in the lake for 1,000 years in the subtle fibers of the stem of a lotus. The fire god used to bring him his share of yajnas, but because the fire god was afraid to enter the water, Indra was practically starving. Text 16.
Tavat trinakam nahusha shasasa vijatapo yoga balanubhava sa sampadashvarya madanda budhir nitastirascham gatimindra patte patnya.
As long as King Indra lived in the water, wrapped in the stem of the lotus, Nahusha was equipped with the ability to rule the heavenly kingdom due to his knowledge, austerity, and mystic power. Nahusha, however blinded and maddened by power and opulence, made undesirable proposals to Indra's wife with a desire to enjoy her. Thus, Nahusha was cursed by a brahmana and later became a snake. We told that story yesterday. Text 17.
Tato gato brahma giro bahuta ritambara jana nivaritagaha papastu digdevatayaha taujas tam navyavud avitam vishnupatya.
Indra's sins were diminished by the influence of Rudra, the demigod of all directions. Because Indra was protected by the goddess of fortune, Lord Vishnu's wife, who resides in the lotus clusters of the Manasa Sarovara Lake, Indra's sins could not affect him. Indra was ultimately relieved of all the reactions of his sinful deeds by strictly worshipping Lord Vishnu. Then he was called back to the heavenly planets by the brahmanas and reinstated in his position. Text 18.
Tam cha paramarshayo bhyecha hayamedena bharata yathava dikshayan chakru purusharadanenaha.
O king, when Indra reached the heavenly planets, the saintly brahmanas approached him and properly initiated him into a horse sacrifice, Ashvamedha Yajna, meant to please the Supreme Lord. Text 19-20.
Tejamane purushe sarva deva mayatmane ashvamede mahendrena vitate brahma vadibhi savai tvastra vadho bhuyan api papa chayonrpa nitastinaiva shunyaya niharaiva banunha.
The horse sacrifice performed by the saintly brahmanas relieved Indra of the reactions to all his sins because he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead in that sacrifice. O king, although he had committed a gravely sinful act, it was nullified at once by that sacrifice, just as fog is vanquished by the brilliant sunrise. Text 21.
Savajimedena yato ditena vithayamanena marichi mishrahai ishvadiyagyam purusham puranam indro mahanasa vidhuta papaha.
King Indra was favored by Marichi and the other great sages. They performed the sacrifice just according to the rules and regulations, worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, the original person. Thus Indra regained his exalted position and was again honored by everyone. And finally, texts 22-23.
Idam akakyanam ashesha papmanam Prakshalanam tirta padanu kirtanam bhakt yutrayam bhakta jananu varnanam mahendra moksham vijayam marutvaha marutvataha pateyurakyanam idam sadabhuta shrinvantyato parvani parvanindriyam danyam yashasam nikilagamochanam vipunjayam swast yayanam tatayusham.
In this very great narrative, there is glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. There are statements about the exaltedness of devotional service. There are descriptions of devotees like Indra and Vritrasura, and there are statements about King Indra's release from sinful life and about his victory in fighting the demons. By understanding this incident, one is relieved of all sinful reactions. Therefore, the learned are always advised to read this narration. If one does so, one will become expert in the activities of the senses, his opulence will increase, and his reputation will become widespread. One will also be relieved of all sinful reactions. He will conquer all of his enemies, and the duration of his life will increase. Because this narration is auspicious in all respects, learned scholars regularly hear and repeat it on every festival day. Interesting. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the sixth canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled King Indra Afflicted by Sinful Reaction. So, Om Gana Timidandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam Gena Tosmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, let's go back to the verse for today. So several questions arise in our minds when we hear these different activities of King Indra and Indra's suffering from sinful activities, that you have the demigods encouraging Indra to perform this activity, yet it describes in the first verse they were happy. And then Indra had to suffer. So it's a little bewildering to think about it, because we know, according to the descriptions about sinful activities concerning meat eating, for example, it's not only the person that kills the cow that's responsible, but you have even the person who condones the activity. What to speak of encourages the activity. Condoning the activity is not condemning. There's a different word, condone and condemn. Condemn means is to say, that's bad, don't do it. I condemn you for doing it. If you do it, I curse you. That's condemning. Condoning means you say, okay, go ahead and do it. It's not exactly encouraging, saying, yeah, it's great, fantastic, go ahead and do it. But it's, you know, tacit approval. Tacit approval means you don't say anything against it. So meat eating, or, you know, eating meat, or killing the cow, you're just as responsible. That's one of the persons who has to suffer that sinful reaction. Even if you don't discourage it, even if, I mean, sometimes you may be visiting one of your relatives, and the relative may be eating meat, and the relative may say, you know, I'm eating meat, and you say, oh, that's okay. That's condoning it. Can you imagine how heavy that, the reaction is just for condoning? And what to speak of encouraging? Here the demigods actually encouraged him to do that. So why didn't they suffer? Well, if they actually encouraged a sinful act, which it was a sinful act, killing a Brahmin, then they would have to suffer. But why were they happy if they had to suffer? Well, then we have to examine the whole process of sin and, you know, suffering from sin and the reactions from sin. It's actually a cycle described by the Acharyas, Srila Rupa Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and others, have described that a sin begins with something called kuta. Kuta means like an inclination. Sometimes it means where from. Kuta. You know, where is it? But anyway, it's an inclination to do something that's not Krishna conscious. To do some sinful activity. Mm. And then after kuta, you got something called a bija. A bija means a seed. The seed of sinful desire. And sometimes the kuta and the bija do not appear externally or prominent, because seed means that a seed can actually be dormant. As Prabhupada gave the example, the seeds or the chickpeas that were found in the pyramids. The pyramids, of course, are ancient Egyptian tombs. And they would generally bury the pharaoh with all of his servants, and they'd bury him with so many of his weapons and things like that. And also they would put some food in there, some chickpeas. Chickpeas or dried beans. And they would take those dried beans out millions of years later. And then you add some water, and they would sprout. And just like you see, you know, we all have dried beans, for example, like mung beans or dried beans. They'll keep for a long period of time, and then you can make mung bean sprouts. They come up very, very quickly. So that's what a bija is. It's a seed. You know, the seed appears not to have life in it, but there is life in a dormant state. So anyway, so we have these, what's called papa bija, which means these seeds of sin. And when there's the right situation, these seeds fructify and we perform a sinful activity. And then when we perform a sinful activity, there's necessarily a reaction to that sinful activity. But that reaction may not fructify. You know, there's different stages of the fructification. There's, you know, just dormant, and then after that there's almost mature and mature. So almost mature means when it's happening, and mature means you've already gotten it in the past, but you have the present effects from what happened in the past. Mm. For example, let's say you have a legal problem. The example Prabhupada gives is, let's say there's a legal problem. That's an almost mature effect. And then being in debt because of the legal problem later on is the mature effect of that. You know, something that's permanent but less. So, and then, even after that, another effect of sinful activity is not just the reaction that you get externally, but you get more inclination and you get more papa bija from the sinful activity. So it's like a vicious cycle. You understand? You perform sin, you get the reaction, and you get more inclination and more desire to perform more sin. And then, of course, that makes you miserable. And the Nectar of Devotion, it states that, of course, one of the first qualities of devotional service is that it relieves you from all distress, because distress comes from sin, or the effects of sin. And so, anyway, so that's the first quality mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami, immediate relief from all distress, and then it's all auspicious. And anyway, you get on to the six qualities of pure devotional service that arise fully during different stages of advancement in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, nectar devotion. So we can understand from this that anyone who encouraged Indra to do something sinful would have to suffer. Although right now they're thinking everything's all right. And similarly in America, we find people thinking everything's all right, we're not suffering so much. Of course, ultimately everyone is suffering because they're suffering due to separation from Krishna. As Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described, that the material happiness is simply the absence of suffering. He gave that example of the dunking stool. That is a method by which they used to punish people in America and also in India. That they would put people under the water. It's like a seesaw. That song, Seesaw, Marjorie Daw, something like that. They'd put people under the water, and they would bring them up, at a certain point when they were practically drowned. And so when they came up, they were in ecstasy because they were able to breathe. Now, for those of us who don't have problems breathing, breathing is not such a, so much of an ecstatic symptom, an anubhav, to put it in Vaishnava nomenclature. I mean, imagine approaching someone and saying, Kardama Muni, how do you feel? He says, I feel great because I'm breathing. Isn't it? I mean, I say, what's wrong with you? Maybe you have asthma, maybe you have some disease like that. So having happiness in the material world is an indication of a disease condition of suffering that you're temporarily relieved from. That's the happiness in the material world, in a nutshell. In a nutshell. And then, you know, we've spoken about this many, many times before. There's like the happiness from eating, you gotta be hungry. Like people say, don't give me food now because you'll spoil my appetite, I won't be able to enjoy dinner. And in order to enjoy lusty activities, you have to be lusty, which is a miserable condition. I mean, have you ever seen someone's face when they're lusty? So there has to be some lack or some pain to enjoy the material world. So even the demigods that are enjoying, unless these demigods, of course, some of the demigods are actually completely Krishna conscious, like Yamaraj, and Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, etc. But generally, the demigods are Sakama devotees. So the demigods' enjoyment is like that too, although it's on a higher standard, but their anxiety is higher too, because, you know, when you have more, your anxiety about losing it is much more. Like if you're just like a sage in the street, in, let's say in Govardhan, chanting Hare Krishna, you're not worried about anything. I mean, what are you going to worry about? I mean, you have no wife. I mean, you're just like offering dandabat parikramas around Govardhan. I was thinking about that. You know, someone just offering dandabat parikramas with his whole life. There's an interview, a very nice interview that was done by Vasudeva Prabhu, who was a filmmaker, of these people doing dandabat parikramas. And people do like 108 or 1,008 in one position. And the people are smiling. They're not in anxiety at all. I mean, apart from the spiritual ecstasy you get from doing that, you know, by rolling in the dust of Govardhan and at the same time rolling in the dust of all the Vaishnavas' feet, because all the Vaishnavas are walking on the sand of Govardhan. Because I don't know about rolling in the on the concrete when you go through certain sections of Govardhan. But at least rolling in the sand. So, but there was no anxiety in the person's face. And you look at people in the modern society who have much more, and there's so much anxiety. Their faces are just full of anxiety. But here's this very simple man. You're just offering that about to put, maybe he's pushing his little cabin down Govardhan. You know, they have these cabins with wheels on them. Anyone see, you seen them? And that's all he has in this world. Of course, he may be in anxiety over someone stealing. But anyway, I don't think people steal those cabins. And then the more you have, I mean, just like the other day, you know, someone got me a new computer. And now I'm anxiety about it. You know, how am I going to travel? You know, what if someone wants to steal my computer? It's such an expensive computer. So it caused me anxiety. I'm not going to get rid of it because I'm using it in Christian service. Oh, maybe I should get an insurance policy. It's almost like that Brahmin with his underwear story that I've told many times. You know, so maybe I need an insurance policy, gotta get a special briefcase with a lock on it, you know, a chain or something like that. And so, you know, all these things, the entanglement in the material world. So anyway, so that's the happiness. So the demigods here, that's the happiness they're getting. Why they're happy? They feel relieved. No one is threatening our heavenly position. That's really the happiness they're experiencing. Due to Vritrasura's being killed. They say, that was a relief. You know, I thought he and the demons were going to take over heaven, and then where would I be? I'd have to suffer. Of course, if one is attached to Krishna's names, even if he has material opulence, then he won't be in anxiety or happy because someone is killed like that. See, that's the real point. I was realizing that yesterday. We were chanting... Somehow or other, you know, it was a codicy, I try to chant more rounds. So yesterday, you know, I don't know if I should speak about my own devotional service, but anyway, I chanted more rounds. And naturally, the anxiety went away. Because I was thinking, wow, this is so nice. Whatever happens, even if, you know, all the devotees think I'm a demon, then I can just sit and chant. Even if everything's taken away, please don't do that, Krishna. But I was actually appreciating that if our happiness is within Krishna consciousness, then basically no material situation can cause us distress. I mean, of course, certain things are distressful, seeing the passing away of a Vaishnava, seeing people blaspheme Krishna, but that's spiritual distress. It's not a material distress. So I was appreciating how nice it is to be given these processes of devotional service, ahaituki apretiyata. There's no material impediment or prerequisite. Yayatma supersedite. We can ask, savaipumsam paradharma yato bhakti adhoksaje. Ahaituki apretiyata. Yayatma supersedite. We don't need anything to perform this devotional service. I mean, even if you become disabled, even if you can't hear, you lose your hearing or your sight or something like, because as you get old, you get an anxiety about so many things. You know, if you discover a little bump on your leg or something like that, you think, oh, maybe it's cancer. You run to the doctor, and then he says, no, but then he says it's just an ingrown hair follicle. But you know, these things cause anxiety. Or what's happening in the world? Is there a conspiracy? The Twin Towers being knocked down, just like I was talking to some students last night, and they were talking about the conspiracy, how the Twin Towers were knocked down by the CIA or, you know, the American government or something like that. And then their anxiety because of that. And then if you simply have Krishna's names, then you can always be happy in any circumstance. This is a very important point. So the demigods, getting back to the point, the demigods' happiness was based on relief from distress, or the threat of losing their position. But ultimately, if they gave advice that ended up in Indra performing some sinful activity, they would have to suffer too because of that. Although it's not apparent, it will come in the future. That's just life. That's, you know, the laws of karma. So then you can go back and say, well, then why was Indra given that weapon or suggested that he could get that weapon by Lord Vishnu? Is Lord Vishnu responsible? You know, you just go back a little. And Lord Vishnu was the one who suggested he could get the weapon from the Dichi's bones, right? And so, huh? So is Lord Vishnu? No. If you put the weapon in someone's hands, it can be a test, too, to see how he'll deal with that weapon. It's not that Vishnu was encouraging him to perform sinful activity. Sometimes Krishna tests us. I mean, just like sometimes the spiritual method. There was this test that Prabhupada gave a devotee one time. The devotee went to Prabhupada and said, I want to take sannyas. And Prabhupada said, I think you should get married. So it was a test. And so the devotee gave up his idea of sannyas and a few days later was introducing his fiancée to Srila Prabhupada. So sometimes Krishna is testing you like that. He may give you certain things. I mean, like Lord Chaitanya says, Nadanam Nadanam Sundarim Kavitam Va Jagadishikamayi. So Krishna may supply certain things like that, but he's testing also to see how you will use them or misuse them and whether you pass the test. Of course, you always have to keep taking tests. So anyways, so it's not that Lord Vishnu is culpable for this sinful activity. But those who encouraged Indra to kill Vritrasura out of a motivation to protect their position are actually culpable too. So this is one of the things we should understand. As it says here, one should study this pastime on a regular basis. It says on festival days. Of course, we don't pull out this section of Bhagavatam on all festival days. But we should study this to really understand the process of sin and also the process of getting rid of sin and what's premeditated sin, what is accidental sin or spur of the moment, as Krishna's sin, as Indra's sin. So Indra's sin was in killing Vishvarupa. So it's a very interesting story in regard to the process of karma, how to deal with karma, who is responsible, what is the reaction, and even how to overcome the reaction, and also that if one is in the spiritual world, or in the spiritual abode, sin doesn't affect you. Because that's why Indra took shelter in a spiritual abode in the lotus flower. But ultimately he had to come out of it and deal with this sinful reaction. So any questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah.
And then he gave him, he gave Indra instructions
how to kill him.
Correct.
Yeah.
And now, because he was kind of down, so to speak.
Yeah.
He is lamenting for his sinful activity because this Richard was creating havoc, he was destroying everything.
Yeah.
So they had to get rid of him. The Supreme Lord had given
the instruction. Yeah, I mean, it's a very difficult question to answer.
Could you summarize what she said?
What she said, yeah, for the people online. So it's very difficult to understand how the Supreme Lord gave him the weapon. Vritrasura was creating havoc everywhere. He had to be stopped. I'm changing your question a little bit. He didn't have to be killed. He had to be stopped. There's a difference between the two. So, he had to be killed. He didn't, my answer to your question is he really didn't have to be killed. Because if he had to be killed, there was an absolute requirement, it wouldn't have been a sinful reaction for killing him. Because let's say if someone is a Brahmin, a devotee, and he's performing sinful activities, and he's doing things, and there's no other way of dealing with him than killing him. Yes. But in the case of Ashwatthama, which I gave the example of yesterday, Ashwatthama should have been killed, but because he was a Brahmin, he shouldn't have been killed. And so the Pandavas, you remember this from yesterday? The Pandavas, especially Arjuna, had to balance those two points. And Arjuna, being more intelligent than Indra, had a win-win solution. He was able to kill him without killing him. So Indra obviously did something wrong. Otherwise, there would not have been a reaction. If what he did was absolutely correct, dharmic, you don't get a sinful reaction from doing something dharmic. Yeah.
Well, what comes to mind is, in one sense, is that Vritrasura really had to be killed so he could go back to God.
Yeah.
And Indra's activities that he committed, I mean, perhaps his consciousness
yeah.
he committed, that is the sin, because he was not completely surrendered to Krishna. He even doubted that he could be saved. So perhaps his consciousness, but Vritrasura really, he said, come and kill me.
He wanted to be killed. He definitely wanted to be killed because he wanted to go back to God. Although Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami, if I thought, by committing suicide, I could achieve Krishna's mercy, then I'd do it. So Vritrasura was executing his service. He was executing his service. But he had to be stopped also. He had to be stopped. So from my understanding is, yes, it was Indra's intention too, that he was killing him because of sense gratification. That's one point. But killing a Brahmin is really, there's no injunction. That's the Bhagavatam says, there's no injunction for killing a Brahmin. There's ways to, other ways to deal with him.
So, it sounded like that, Indra had very good faith on the power of the word, so there's a pretty
yeah.
under weapon and the outcome.
Yeah, he had practically no faith. Yeah, because Vritrasura had to say, this weapon will work. So, you gotta have faith. So basically when Indra realized that he was a Brahmin, going back to that whole story about Arjuna and Ashwatthama and everything like that, it was pointed out there is no injunction for killing the body of a Brahmin. If a Brahmin does something bad, the punishment is different, or the rectification is different, according to the Manusamhita. So I'm just following the injunction of the Manusamhita.
But he also forced him to, when he swallowed Indra, he actually, at that point...
Yeah, he was forced at that point.
He didn't have a choice at that point.
Yeah, at that point. But he was... But according to the Manusamhita, a Brahmana's body is not to be killed. I'm just quoting from the Manusamhita. There's other ways of dealing with a Brahmin. And so the way that... Anyway, it's, like I said, it's a very difficult thing to understand. That's the point.
And the other demigods who are happy, actually, because they're happy, because they really don't realize the full implication of what that happened.
Yeah. Whereas Indra was more intelligent. He realized the implication. He felt guilty. He felt remorseful. It's a very complicated thing to understand, this whole thing. But just quoting from the Shastras, the Brahmana is not to be killed. Capital punishment does not apply to a Brahmana. So Indra was violating at least the Manusamhita here.